This is Voice Notes to Friends.
Hi, you guys. Welcome back to another episode of Voice Notes to Friends. It's F. T's here too, Hello. As usual. Today's episode, we decided to talk about, I guess, therapy and mental health, but I would say it's mostly about therapy. We keep talking about and we keep referring to the work that we are doing and how much we work on ourselves and how it's so important. But I guess we never actually explicitly say what that work is. And so a few people have asked us, have been like, oh, what's the work? Like, what are the turning points for you and all of that? So we figured we'd talk about it. This isn't the first time we've recorded it because it's quite scary. So we're a little bit nervous, I would say. I mean, I am. Are you nervous?
Kinda, yeah. Absolutely. This is heavy.
Because we don't want to misspeak on such a heavy topic, yeah. I guess. But yeah, we'll give it a go as usual. And obviously let us know if you agree, disagree, any comments you may have. So, T, do you want to start with, I guess when you became aware of, you know, mental health, when you thought it wasn't so great, and how you started your journey of this, like, healing?
So I think, Yanni, the first thing that happened in my life that made me, you know, realize, oh, mental health or whatever, is my dad passing away when I was 12. Like, that was the first traumatic experience, and then just dealing with that and feeling, I feel like that mainly contributed to like chronic low level anxiety in my life. And then feeling like I don't have trust, I guess, in the universe in a way, because it's so uncertain. Like, I just felt like, oh, you know, you think one thing one day and then boom, like suddenly something happens, right? And that's no longer the case. So then you go through like an existential crisis of sorts at such a young age, and you had to like grow up so quickly and realize this notion of life and death. And I was so angry. I was genuinely an angry kid for a few years. And until, I don't know, like through just a conversation, Kida, and just through, I don't know what happened. Like suddenly I internalized this idea, which we all know, but I really like understood it and know, oh, okay, like shit happens, life happens. And this is one of them. It just happened. I understood why it had to happen. I saw it. Not many people understand. Like, you see the silver lining almost. It's like growth after trauma, basically. And then that's what I experienced later on, just through talking and talking to my mom mainly. That's what kind of helped me heal in a way. Plus through like personal endeavors, through reading and, you know, just helping myself and reading stuff about that helped me.
But did your mom or did you go to therapy or anything for that?
Not for this. No. So I actually never went to therapy for this reason in terms of like my dad dying, right? But I went to therapy for other things. So my dad dying didn't cause like daddy issues or feelings of like abandonment or needing the male figure and stuff. It caused just like that uncertainty, right? That was it. Me going to therapy was due to the main issue in my life that I'm constantly, you know, working on, right? Because you fall off the wagon and then you get back on and stuff. Feelings of self-worth, self-love, value, like that whole thing, right? And how it manifests in my life. And it manifested in a way where it's like, okay, I'm not good enough. I'm not enough in general. I'm not good enough, pretty enough, smart enough. I have imposter syndrome. So I like always feel like I don't know anything. I don't know enough. I'm a fraud. Like, what the hell's happening? But it manifested in a way. I had an eating disorder at some point in my life. And I went to therapy. So the first time I went to therapy was for my eating disorder when I was around 20, 21. That was very interesting. That was an interesting journey for me. I can't pinpoint how exactly I got over it because it's a daily struggle. Like to this day, but on a much smaller scale. Like I'm in such a better place, but that's through just different things. So the first therapy experience was CBT. And then the doctor during that, one of my sessions was like, Aslan, you know, CBT doesn't really work well for, doesn't really help with eating disorders and stuff. So I was like, why am I doing this then? I think I need to try another form of therapy. And, or then like, I was like, halas, no therapy.
But what drove you to CBT? Like, if it wasn't, why did you choose, or why did you gravitate towards CBT in the first place?
Because at the time, one of my friends was seeing this doctor, and she was like, he's amazing. He's actually one of like the best CBT practitioners in Beirut. So I saw him, right? And because she had depression, but a chronic depression. But aslan CBT works quite well for some people with depression and anxiety, okada, but not for eating disorder. So I just assumed like it would help. And then he said, you know, maybe it can't. And I was like, oh, okay, never mind then. And I didn't enjoy it. The method didn't work for me. I didn't connect to the therapist. So, yeah, that was a dead end.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete side note, but I also didn't like CBT at all. And it wasn't like my preferred method at all. And I just felt like it was, I don't know, it was... We'll talk about this in a bit, and therapy is hard work, but I felt like it was too much. Like, I'm already coming from a very, like, vulnerable place, and I'm putting myself out there, and I don't want the therapist to be like, no, 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 don't feel this. You know, maybe it's the therapist, maybe it's the time of life that I was, like, in, but it just felt too aggressive for me and too rigid. Like, you couldn't feel your feelings. No, every time you feel a feeling, you have to observe it, you have to do, and it just didn't work for me. Yeah, it's very intense. It's like I'm struggling right now, so I don't need someone else like
on top
putting these,
on me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What was your how was your first experience with like mental health, and what was your journey there?
Yeah, so again, like with everything in my life, I could only see it going bad. You know, when I was, I think about 5. My mom listens to this, I'm sure she'll fact check. She'll be like, no, you were 3 or something like that. But anyways, my mom, when I was younger, she used to travel a lot. And she used to travel all over. And she used to go to the US. She used to go like on long haul flights. At the time, they were much longer as well. And I was completely fine, like completely, completely fine. And that one time she went to, I think it was France. And so it's a much shorter flight, but I don't know why I had this. I at the time, I didn't know it was anxiety. I was so young. Just had this like crippling worry and like sense of doom in my chest. And I think anyone with anxiety will know.
Yeah.
It's like a physical feeling. Mm-hmm. It's like this sinking sensation in your chest. And even if rationally your mind is like, I'm not worried about anything kind of thing, it's still there. It's really strange. I don't know. It's really unsettling, I would say. So anyways, crying, so, so worried. The whole trip, my mom was there. Haram, she couldn't enjoy it because, like, I was just, like, miserable. And I was just like, no, is she okay? And I don't know. It's, like, that's the thing with anxiety and depression as well. Sometimes it doesn't really make sense. Like, you can sit with yourself and talk yourself down from these. Try
to rationalize
talk
yourself
down. But it doesn't matter. It's physical. It's like a for me at least, it feels, I don't know if it's the same for you, it feels physical. Like it's not even in my head. Like my body is just reacting this way. So that's, looking back, that would be the first time I felt something wasn't right. And then from that point onwards, that point actually makes me sad because from that point onwards, I don't think I was ever the same again. This isn't a significant event. My mom just went on vacation kind of thing. But I don't remember ever being 100% happy, which is sad because that was like 20 years ago, I guess. But that was my first experience that I can remember. And then it happened a few times and it was like a lot of ups and downs and stuff until I moved here actually, and I went to boarding school. And that was my first, because like when you're living at home with family, it's really hard to let yourself go in a way, because like every day you wake up and you have to kind of show up for these people, you know, because you're like, and I don't know if being an empath fits in here, but I don't want to see my parents upset because I'm upset, because then it's a vicious cycle of all of us being upset kind
feeling
of thing.
Feeling each other's emotions. And
yeah,
stuff,
exactly. Yeah. So I never really, really showed my emotions at home. But when I went to school, it was just kind of like, I don't know if it was just like, my first proper opportunity to let myself feel these feelings. So that I didn't know anyone there, and I didn't think they cared enough, you know, to like be affected by my emotions. So yeah, boarding school also was my first like experience of really like feeling the sadness and really letting myself sit in it. And then the next year, even more freedom, I went to university.
Yeah.
And that's when it really started. I would like just stay in bed for 2 weeks at a time and like literally just be a slob. And I'm not judging myself, but truly like just not shower, not eat, like have a little bit of food in my room. And that's it. Like,
would there be something that triggers it, or it just happens?
No, I literally go to, I'm sure like now looking back, and I'm actually in therapy right now trying to find these triggers. So I'm like journaling a lot and stuff to try and find these triggers, but I don't know. Like I would go to bed, I'm happy, normal. And then one day it's like a cloud. It's like a really, really shitty gray cloud. Just can't get out of it. And no matter how much I want to get out of it, I can't. Anyways, long story, not short, but long story, kind of medium length. After one of those episodes, I was like, no, Jolos, I need to do something about this. I can't continue to live my life like this. Like, why? So I went and saw a counselor at, it's a therapist, but in the UK, it's called counseling, I guess. Through my GP, I went and I explained how I was feeling, and they referred me to a counselor. And that was my first experience. And yeah, it's been a never-ending journey ever since that I'm so glad I'm on, by the way. So yeah, how about you? Like, have you continued to seek therapy after that first experience with CBT? Wala, how has it gone since then?
Since CBT, since that time, I guess I went on, like, I was seeking different ways of healing, I guess, right? So like alternative things, which I won't get into in this episode. Like, we can talk about it in another episode if people are interested in that realm, I guess. But I was doing things like theta healing, sound healing, stuff like that. Reiki, ukeda. And a lot, I do a lot of reading. A lot of reading. And like a lot of sitting with myself and asking myself questions and trying to do like shadow work offline. Like, not only in therapy, obviously. So before I even knew what shadow work was, which is like working on the deepest parts of your psyche that you've repressed basically because of childhood and trying to like assimilate. And it's these parts of you that have lacked love and attention and validation. And so they just manifest in different ways. And these cause like projections or insecurities. And it's basically like healing your inner child. So I was doing that without knowing that that was what I was doing, right? Like, not professionally. But then, I don't know, I just found myself, I guess, seeing a therapist when I was back in Saudi. Like, I went years without therapy, without actual therapy. And then I came back to Saudi and I found a therapist that I thought would be like cool, because a lot of people referred me to her. And she's Saudi, but you know, she studied abroad for kida munfataha and her mentality. Like, she's open-minded and whatever, which I guess she was, but I also didn't click with her. It was psychotherapy, but very like Freudian. And it was a lot of me talking and her just umming and or like just nodding her head and go like, okay, so how does that make you feel? It's like, okay,
how do you feel about that?
Yeah, how do you feel about that? And I'm like, okay, dude, I know, like, I know all this, I need more, I need a back and forth, I need you to like give me something. She's like, no, that's not how I work. And I was like, okay, well, this is not working for me.
Yeah.
And then I found another therapist that I work with now, but like I'm not currently in therapy. I want to go back. I haven't done therapy in like 2 months maybe. But now I want to go back to her. So she's like on retainer, you know. It's like she's my go-to therapist now. She's a foreigner, but she lives in Dubai. And so she's lived there for a long time and she's sensitive to the culture, Yanni. She understands.
Do you guys do it online then?
Yeah, Zoom.
Yeah.
Or FaceTime, whatever. Yani.
Same, because of Corona at the moment, so that's what I'm doing.
بالضبط. فبصراحة ارتحت لها جدا. Like, I can talk to her about everything. I don't have to filter out anything. Like, even when it comes to like taboo, quote unquote, whatever, sensitive topics or like things like sexuality, وكده, that I might be uncomfortable talking about with an Arab therapist.
No, there's always that. Even though it's like confidential, and you're just talking about like the most like inner part of your like thoughts, hatta, not even when it's not actions. There's always that, like, you can't do it.
I don't know why. Judgment, مش عارفة. Yeah. I can't. في barrier كده. I can't.
And you have to explain yourself almost. You're like, no, I didn't do it. I was just thinking, or like like that. Yeah, I would never. But it's like, but what if you're thinking that you would? You need to be honest with your therapist.
That's so important. You have to be so honest with your therapist, or your therapist is not going to know how to help you properly. You know, because the therapist has to have all the context in the world to be able to give you sound, you know, to give you a sound method, basically, of healing.
Yeah, exactly. It's also like, I personally, I find it's really, really good with therapy because it's almost like you can leave it there. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm the most like the least judgmental person in the world, or I'm like your least judgmental friend or whatever. I am going to react because I'm a human, and our relationship will somewhat be altered by whatever you tell me. Hmm. Maybe not in a bad way, but that's really the good thing about therapy, I think, is that you just leave it there. Like, when you leave, you can go back to your life. So you can be as raw as possible, basically, about all of your like most hateful emotion. I'm talking about myself. Like, when I'm like angry at someone or whatever, I don't feel bad because like you don't know my mom or my sister or whatever.
Exactly.
You know? The therapist, that is.
Yeah. And I have a great relationship with my therapist. And it's not just psychotherapy. She does something called the Hoffman process, which is also very much like inner. Oh, you've heard about it?
I've heard Jen Atkin, you know?
Oh,
you
know Jen Atkin? Yeah.
Yeah, she always posts about it. I heard. Yeah, it's really great. Good. I haven't gotten into it.
Oh, I'll did I send you my therapist's number?
No, you should send.
I will. She's great. No, she's wonderful, and she does like so. Yeah, it's Hoffman process / breathwork / you know, inner child stuff. I don't know. It's amazing. It's very holistic and well rounded. And there's visualization techniques, which I need because of like my whole uncertainty issue.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just learned to like love myself more. I don't know. She just really helped me with this notion of self-love and self-worth a lot. I don't know. Just the way what she says, and she gives me like affirmations afterwards and like all the meditation stuff. This is a method that has been working for me personally.
Yeah. I don't know why. What I like when a professional tells me to do something as well, for some reason, I feel like, yeah, okay. But if I just like, I'm like, okay, I'm beautiful, whatever, in the morning, it doesn't work for me. But if we talk about it and I'm like, okay, this is how I'm feeling, and they really listen to me and then come back with a solution, I feel like it's not generic. So for me, I really feel like, okay, this is gonna work, you know. And that's so important, because I don't know, for the longest time I thought I was never gonna be like fixed, like quote unquote fixed. I was so like hopeless at a time. I was like, this is just something that I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. This like sadness and despair and like feeling of doom and stuff. But I'm a lot more hopeful now. And like, I will say that even when those like depressive episodes come, of course I feel hopeless. I mean, anyone with depression, like, will understand. It's just like the most terrible thing in the world. You feel so helpless. Like, you can't do anything about it. It's like your mind come in, not your body. Like, I feel like it's different when you're sick and your body, because like it's so like mainstream, like known that your body will heal. Mm-hmm. You know, of course there's chronic illnesses, but it's portrayed a lot more. It's the same with representation. Like, you know, you take medicine, you know that this could, you know all of the ways to cope. But with mental health, I feel like, I don't know, I always felt like my mind was betraying me, kind of. I was like, why aren't you functioning properly? Right. You know, it's very, very, it's the same physically, but with your mind, it hurts more, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. We tend to be fixated on this idea of like, we have to fix ourselves. And there's like a fixed version of me, you know? And that's terrible. That's terrible to think of it that way. I feel like, because you're always going to want to be fixed. And then when you think you're fixed, there's more fixing. I don't know. It's just never, it's a vicious cycle, I feel.
Yeah. I think that's a really good, like, I guess good place to segue into why we feel we have these issues in the first place.
Yeah.
So where do you think, obviously your anxiety, you think
mostly stemmed from your dad passing and that uncertainty and the fact that it's now obviously everyone's uncertain and like everyone knows that life is like full of surprises, but it almost became something that drives your life. Like every time it's like at the forefront of your thinking and that's not healthy, obviously. But what about the eating disorder and then the what are you like, what issues have you carried over now into adulthood kind of for adults? And are working on.
Yeah. So to do with like the anxiety, right? And why I'm working on it and I will continue to work on it is because it's blocking me from visualizing and manifesting, right? And that's terrible. So I have these limiting false beliefs because of my uncertainty of the world that are blocking certain manifestations from being actualized, right?
Yeah.
And that is that loses, it's not the point then. You know what I mean? It's like, no matter how much I visualize, I can't make it happen, and so I just can't envision a clear future for me almost. So even when someone just asks me a simple question, like, you know, I hate this question though, but it's like, where do you see yourself in 5 years, or what do you see yourself doing, like, I don't know, I really don't know. And I'm like, I want to know, and like, I have dreams, but then I don't know if those dreams will come true because I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
I get stuck in that, but trying slowly but surely to get out of that.
No, but it's good. At least, like, I think, and you mentioned this the first time we recorded, is that recognizing you have a problem or is acknowledging the first step. That this is something you would like to work on, you would like to improve, is genuinely the first and hardest step. Like, self-awareness is so important, really, on this journey.
Yes. So that's to do with that. With my eating disorder, I can't pinpoint exactly how. I think I said it's like, I don't know exactly when it just like stopped being a main issue, or like not me being fixated on like portions I'm eating or the quantity or, you know, how I look and whatever. But the underlying issue, right, is that I don't feel like I'm enough. And that's the main thing that I struggle with every day. And it's, and they manifest in two ways, though. It manifests in my relationships. And it manifests in my career. Not because I'm a woman, right? It's different. So it's not because I'm a woman that I don't feel like I will go any. No. It's just like, am I smart enough? How am I here? Do I deserve this? And that's on one level, because it's like levels, right? It's not like I've always been like this, and it gets better and better. But like, there's one level, conscious level, that's like, no, I deserve this, and I'm amazing, and I love myself, and yes, right? I'm like rooting for myself. It's very positive. Yeah. But then on another like unconscious level where my inner critic is just so mean, such a bully.
So mean.
Literally, it's like kicking me while I'm down or whatever, you know, it's that personality. So and it's just like, no, you're not enough. There's people that out there that are smarter than you, better than you, everything more than you. And it creeps up, and I'm glad that I catch myself, right? I catch it. I'm like, oh, there you are. I found you. I got you. But I don't know if that's even, I mean, I'm sure that's possible. I just want to stop having to catch myself. Like, why do I have to have these thoughts in the beginning to end up catching myself having them, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I feel like everyone, I think, like you said, like, there's no point where you're going to be perfect and, like, fixed or whatever. It's about, like, making that voice quieter and quieter. Yeah. And knowing, I mean, this is something I talked to my therapist about last week, basically. It's about having, you're never going to be like perfect.
Yeah.
But it's about having the tools to get back on track when you fall off. That's the most important thing, because I have this problem with control where I just want to control as many variables as I can in my life, because I feel like, and that comes from like my fear of being depressed or like falling into this depressive episode, because it is so scary. So it's basically like, you can never control everything.
Yeah.
So the most important, well, it's not, but one of the really, really important things on this journey is being able to like have the tools. So like when that really, really mean inner critic comes up, being able to sit with her, I guess, and like kind of be like, done the work. I am good because of this, this, and this, and almost like having proof. So like a good exercise. I mean, this is just like a tip, I guess. So sorry, it's like slightly, but it's for you as well, I guess. This is what my therapist said. Just like write down, like really write down examples where you like kicked ass and were amazing and stuff. And really like give concrete examples, because you're right. That inner critic is so mean. and so like manipulative. Like it makes you feel like you're crazy. You're like, you wrote like, oh, I did this amazing thing at work, مثلا. They're like, no, you didn't even do that. That guy helped you. You know,
it just happened.
Convincing. And it, because they, it's downplay inside it. Your mind. Yeah, it's inside your mind. So it knows all the right tricks to get you to like not believe yourself. I'm like, oh God, it's exhausting as well.
It is
like,
so back exhausting. And forth. Oof. But one thing that I worked on, so because of, thank you for that. First of all, thank you for that tip. I'm totally going to do that every day, literally. But with this issue of like self-love and stuff, because it stemmed from, I realized I didn't say this, it stems from comparison, right? Constantly being compared to someone or others or whatever, and then just hearing unsolicited opinions from people. Like, I don't know why people tend to share specific comments. Like, no one cares. No one asked you. You know, like you said when we recorded, like, oh, حسيتي, like the first, you know, comment when they see you after a long time, oh, حسيتي, oh, شكلك حلو. It's always, the connotation is very positive, لما حسيتي, you know?
Yeah, always, always. You look great when you've lost like 20 kilos. Like, do I though?
Yeah. So now whenever I don't take any comparison. Like, whenever someone's going to compare me, I'm like, I don't know. I always stand up to them and go like, please don't say things like that. You know, oh, if I see someone comparing, like when someone in the family, for example, to someone else, I'm like, can you please not do that? This person is a kid and each person is their own person. Why are we comparing? Like, خلاص, I can't stand for it anymore because I know how much it can fuck you up.
Yeah.
How is it for you? Like, how did it start for you and everything for you, basically?
I would say it's like, It's. I mean, I don't know. Does everyone's problems start from like low self-worth and self-esteem issues? I don't really know, but it was the same for me, I think. I would say it's a combination of things. So I think it's my temperament. Like, I think I'm genetically predisposed to having depression. Anxiety, we'll talk about in a second. Yeah. But depression, I do think I have a history of depression in my family for sure. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, being Arab and just my parents and grandparents and, you know, older people in my family being from a different generation in the region, especially, I mean, I think everyone from that generation in general isn't the most in touch with their emotions, but Arabs specifically, I would say.
Yeah.
So it was hard for me growing up because I felt like I was so broken, and I'm not like, oh, I'm broken, but like in a like literally something in my mind is broken. And no one else has this problem. So it's like, why can't I just get over it? Like, why am I the only one suffering with this? But now, again, in hindsight, I look at my parents and I can see that they also suffered, but it just manifested in a very, very different way. It's like if my mom would yell at me, like my mom doesn't yell, but if she would yell at me, I can now like go back and like connect the dots. She was just so anxious. Like I could tell the situation caused her great, like a lot of anxiety. My dad, if he was being extremely quiet, extremely distant, now I can see, you know, what was going on. And like, I don't want to talk about my parents too much because obviously that's their business. But do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just like, it was just, and I wasn't even like, because then I call it like, I'm not the most open person with my emotions, like it's on a one-to-one relationship level. Yeah. So I'm like, so at one point during therapy, I was like, well, you know, maybe if they had expressed their emotions more, then I would have felt more comfortable. But I realized that I don't even express my emotions, like even now. And I think I touched on it. I don't want my, like, because, you know, parents, like, they would do anything for you. And, like, they love you so much.
They don't want you to be upset. And
they really feel your pain, like, really feel your pain. So I don't want to upset them. But then I realized that, fair enough, like I chose the therapy route, but some people don't have that option, right? Yeah. So I think definitely please, 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 please reach out to someone if you're feeling this way, because you don't have to do it alone, kind of thing. And I did it alone for a very long period of time. But yeah, so I would say one is genetic predisposition for like feeling low.
I want to say something because like I just
realized. Oh yeah.
So you saying you're genetically predisposed doesn't necessarily mean that you would exhibit that behavior, just for everyone to know, Annie. But it did, you know, why the gene was activated or whatever in you, Masan, is because your environment, you know, basically cause that gene to be activated and exhibit itself. Yeah. So a depression gene to be activated. So yeah. It's part of like the biopsychosocial model and your temperament, right? Or like just in general, like the inner workings of your mind. So it's all those things combined that made you, you know, who you are.
No, 100%. So that also ties in with like why I'm not so hopeless anymore. Because it's like, it's ups and downs. And we talked about like if anyone is interested and feels like it helps relating to our journey, we're like more than happy to do like separate sort of individual voice notes on our like a timeline of our mental health. Yeah. Because, you know, it is like
so much
up, down, like all over the place. Turbulent, go back a couple steps, go forward like a little bit, you know, whatever. But so at one point, I felt so hopeless because I was like, it's like when I found out about my parents or like when I realized about my parents, I was like, looking back, I was like, my grandma was depressed, my aunt, everyone. Yeah. I was just like, everyone. So I was like, "Kholos any, it's just in my family. There's nothing I can do about it." It felt so hopeless. And then this whole thing about genes, like epigenetics, I think every time I'm like, I don't know the word epigenetics, like genes being switched on and off, then I got like this new burst of hope because I was like, okay, well, if I can, you know, I'll do as much as possible to make sure it's switched off effectively.
Yeah. And no, basically the generational trauma ends with you.
Yeah. I really, but like then I like, yeah, but then I don't, I'm so scared of passing this on to someone. Honestly, I really am. Unless I have kids with like the world's most sort of mentally stable person that has like no disposition to this. But anyways, so that's one, the genetic thing. Yeah. Second is, so the environment part, I would say, is I really want to do well like in life, as does everyone, I'm sure. But I don't know why I feel this like huge weight. Like I really want... I feel like my parents gave me so much. First of all, I don't want to disappoint them at all.
Yeah. Oof. That's so much. It's so much pressure.
It's such a, like, and I feel like it's a lot, like, I think Arabs, Asians, like, it's more, I mean, it's going to be different from one family to another, of course, and I'm sure, like, everywhere there are families like this.
But predominantly in these cultures.
Yeah, and I just really, really feel the pressure and I don't want to disappoint anyone and I want to be everything for everyone all the time.
Which is impossible.
It's impossible and it leaves no room for me.
For you, yeah.
And it makes me fall off and then I can't try to get back for anyone. Yeah. And it's just this vicious, like, it's exhausting. It's truly exhausting. And I, like, again, in therapy, I found out, like, I'm so tired all the time. And I have, like, some chronic diseases, like physical ones that are not severe, alhamdulillah, but, like, that make me tired, but I am exhausted all the time because of like this battle that I have in my mind. It's so like, it's so exhausting. So exhausting. That also doesn't help, this like wanting to like be everything for everyone all the time, be the best at everything all the time, all of that. So I would say that those are the two main things, I think. I think obviously with anyone, like, your parents are just people, I'm sure, that contribute. Like the way my dad, Masalan, we used to work so much when I was younger, wasn't around, and then was around, and then just me flipping between, like, is he around, is he not around? Mm-hmm. My dad, like, he's trying his best, like anyone else. Yeah. My mom, she's trying her best. They're amazing parents. They've given me, like, all that they can give me, but relationships with parents, they will leave an effect on you no matter like how great your parents
they're complex,
are.
Yeah.
Because they're people too, you know, and they have their own issues they're working on. So yeah, I would say that's probably it. It's hard because I haven't actually figured out what triggers it yet, you know? So
but that's why you're still doing therapy.
Yeah, I am still and I'm like deep in it now because a couple weeks ago I just felt like I couldn't control my emotions. I hate not being in control. That's also something I'm working on. So I called my therapist and I was like, we gotta
squeeze me in,
get back on track. And so I'm like journaling a lot these days, just trying to put my thoughts on paper. Also add one thing, just so you know, like it's not easy because like I don't trust my mind, kind of, because I feel like it's failed me in a way so many times. So like when I journal, I want to like rip the paper, even though no one else is going to read it. I'm like, no, that's not actually how I feel. Oh. No, that's not how the situation happened.
But it's why are exhausting. You filtering? Yeah, why are you filtering out your thoughts? It's your journal.
I'm filtering. I write it down. And then
but
I'm
then
like,
you're like, no. And no, filtering. No, that's not how the
I
word.
Feel. Yeah, I don't like, want no. it. Mm. Why am I like editing? What can yeah. I don't want it on paper because it's not the truth.
But maybe it is a truth. It is a truth. Well, it is a truth. It's not the truth.
I'm like, no, no, you're just trying to victimize yourself. No, obviously you could have handled yourself better. Like if I mustn't have a mish argument with my mom, yani, it's normal, you know?
Mm.
I beat myself up so much. I'm like, no, she didn't mean it that way.
And oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And my therapist, she's like, it's fine though. Like you're the fact that you're like, going back and criticizing yourself already proves you're not like this terrible yes. person, but I'm so harsh on myself.
Oh my
so
God.
Harsh.
Once I wrote something, like, yeah, I know my mom had we had an argument one day, like it blew up and stuff, and I was writing in my journal. And then the next day I calmed down and I slept it off. And then I go back to my journal and I read. And then on literally the next page, I just write, LOL, how dramatic was I?
Yeah. Because it's, I don't know, because once you've calmed down, like, your emotions are so high, like, heightened, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, my God, like, I hate everyone. Yeah, I'm never going to recover from this.
Anyway, then you read it, like, who is this person? That's a bit much.
Yeah, so my therapist suggested to just, like, not look at it again. She actually suggested, like, get a shitty journal so you want to throw it away after. Like, just, or a piece of paper, fold it up, throw it away. As long, basically, the my laiha. Problem is, you need to, like, download some of your thoughts and I'm like, but what's the
offload
I was like,
it's like you're offloading
what's the point, like my mind goes so fast. It's not like I'm gonna stop thinking about it once I've like offloaded it. And she was like, yeah, but at least you're freeing like 5% 10% capacity. So at least one instance of those thoughts is not there anymore, so you have a little bit more mental room. Space and slowly you'll get better. So I haven't gotten better yet, but I'm working on it, I would say.
What kind of therapy are you doing? Is it just
psychotherapy? Yes, so it's just psychotherapy. Like I said, CBT.
Yeah, no.
Not for me. I think especially because I don't like relying on other people in general. So I need somewhere where I can be like soft and like receive help. Mm-hmm. So I think I said this like the first time we recorded. The banana analogy.
I love that one. Like, please say it.
It's like when I'm feeling this way, I feel like I'm a banana without the peel on. And you can't just walk around, you know? You can't have someone be aggressive. You need someone to be very... If you're holding a banana without the peel, you have to be very gentle or else it's going to get super bruised.
Especially if it's ripe already, you know? It's on the verge. Yeah.
It is. It is. So, yeah, you need someone you trust to be your therapist. You need to make sure that, like... You know, you're comfortable. That's why I kind of like don't like online. I mean, it's fine. It does the job. Yeah. But I like the ritual of going to therapy, getting a hot tea, sitting with my blanket. Yeah. And I'm like, and she's like, okay, so how are you? And I'm just like, start.
Just unpack and it all.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It is. I don't know. Do you like, I guess we're not going to really talk about the different type of therapy. We're not really gonna go into it, but would you say psychotherapy is your preferred form? Because it definitely is for me, like
talking. Definitely talking, but not just talking, right? Because I tried that other talking and so just a more holistic approach, just a more spiritual approach, I think. And just because, like, I mean, I'll touch on it, and then if people want to know more about these other alternative things, then you know, we can have another episode. But like things like theta healing, things like Reiki, you know, all that stuff, all the spiritual stuff that could be or could seem woo-woo to other people, you know, and sound baths, that really works for me, right? Because I believe in it. I believe in energy and all that. So it helps, you know, it works. It integration is key for me. And so, in a few days, I'm going to try something called shamanic healing. This like old tradition and like spiritual retrieval or count. I'm not really sure. It's just like about inner healing and healing false limiting beliefs that you have, basically, which is, and I'm like, why not? It's not that my psychotherapy isn't working. It's that I'm like, why not? There's so many different methods and like this might work, that might work. And And I'm obviously very, like saying this, I'm very aware of like that privilege that I have to be able to try these different things.
Yeah, or even go to therapy at
Aslan,
all in first place. Yeah, I don't know. I wish therapy was more accessible. I would say. I really, really want to do something in the future. I don't know. Who knows what it is? Or like contribute or something. But I know, I don't know. I know how hopeless I felt in the past. So I don't, it like hurts me when I think of people, especially, I don't know, obviously because I'm from Egypt. I think like people in Egypt that don't even like have access to that at all. Because I guess we can briefly talk about medication, because I have been on medication before. So one of my really, really hopeless cycles, I guess, I was in Egypt just on vacation. So I lived in the UK, but I was in Egypt. And I went to a therapist. I just felt so low. I don't really want to like get into the details of how low I felt, but I felt really khalos, very, very hopeless. And so I was like, my mom, no, even my mom, usually I just like, my mom noticed. She was like, you should like go to a doctor. Like, you know, you need to talk to a professional. So I was like, okay. So I go and I tell the doctor how I'm feeling and stuff. And I think, I don't know, consultation must have been like 5-10 minutes. He prescribed me some SSRIs.
He's some a psychiatrist.
Medication. Yeah. So, anxiety. I can't remember what it was, like whatever, like Xanax or, you know, whatever. I don't know the active ingredient, but that SSRIs and something for sleep, because I wasn't sleeping. So I'm like on a cocktail of like three different drugs, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine, I guess, but I don't like, he didn't recommend that I do, he didn't recommend anything. He's like, he didn't recommend that I exercise once I was out of it. There was no follow-up scheduled. You know what I mean? Like, there was nothing.
Lazy.
Coabes, he was like,
raha, very lazy.
It's like vitamins, yani. You keep taking it. And what I will say, first of all, I hated it. That's number one.
But it was necessary, maybe.
It was necessary. So I will say that it was necessary and it definitely helped me out of that hole. But I would say, like, I can't remember how long I was on them for, but I would say I was on them for a few months too many, because
it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And I was feeling so numb, yani. I wasn't sad. No, I didn't have that feeling of doom. But I also had no joy.
Yeah.
Everything just felt very like meh.
Neutral.
But again, compared to the doom and despair, it was better. It was definitely better. And I needed it to be able to function every day and you know, maybe research and find different ways to get back on track to where I wanted to be. So I would say, I think one of my therapists after that used a really good analogy about medication, is that it's like a crutch. Like, you use it when you know you've hurt your leg or something and you can't fully walk. But if your leg has healed from that initial like trauma, you should be able to like do rehab and whatever and then walk normally by yourself again. Obviously, this is just my experience. Some people do need drugs long term, but experience.
But also, even if you do need drugs long term, and this is what you learn in psychology, kalamda, and no, a combined approach is best. It's not just medication. You need that talk therapy or that other healing. If it's not talk, it could be like music therapy, art therapy, whatever. You need that sort of outlet, I guess, to express it, not just, you know, repress it, I guess, with medication. I also tried meds when I went to CBT. The guy gave me meds, and that didn't work. I mean, it worked. I guess it did its job, which was to not have me fixate over things that didn't matter, I guess. But then, as you said, I just felt just the same. It was just the same feeling, you know? Like, yeah, okay, great. I'm not fixated on something. I'm not feeling any negative emotions, but I'm like not feeling any emotion. We're doing this, great, fun, you know, whatever.
Is that when you felt like you were like getting better? Because like now we're talking about it, I realized when I felt really like terrible, I didn't even want to feel happy. I just didn't want to feel it anymore, the terrible. But then when I wasn't feeling anything at all, and I started craving that joy and being like, oh, this is so like monotone, like I can't live like this. I guess now in hindsight, that's when I felt like, okay, cholos, this is the turning point. It's done its job. Yeah, right.
That was the tipping point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, look at
epiphany.
Us. Yeah, finally. Years of therapy paying off, you guys.
You're right. That was necessary.
Yeah. So it does help, but you know, depends.
But also, yeah, you need to have a level of self-awareness to get yourself out of that. And like, things need to be conscious, and you need to be
and accountability. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going out partying all the time and like just like pumping your body full of like stuff that's gonna make you feel down after, or even not even that, God, like junk food, like just, you know, in general. By the way, I'm not like the healthiest person in the world. I don't like work out all the time. I'm just saying, when I'm not taking care of myself, when I'm not sleeping well, not because of a mental illness, but because I'm just not taking care of myself, and then I fall into one of those cycles, I should be able to be like, no, look, there are certain things that are in your control. Certain things aren't, because it just comes and goes. I can't really mm-hmm. control it yet.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what triggers it, but there are definitely certain things that I could be doing to take care of myself, make sure that I'm, you know, as healthy as possible, basically.
Yeah, and you doing that is a form of self-love, or is an act of self-love. Yeah,
100%.
It's definitely investing in yourself at the end of the day. And that is ideally the best form of investment, I guess.
Yeah, no, 100%. I guess I just wanted to touch on I don't know, I always like plug someone, but the holistic psychologist.
I was actually just going to tell you, yo, don't you want to talk about the holistic psychologist?
Yeah, I do. Her name is Dr. Nicole LaPera, I think. I don't know her last name, but yeah, basically at the holistic psychologist on Instagram. She's so great.
Great content. Mm-hmm.
Great content and great free content as mm-hmm. well. So she has
accessible.
Yeah, YouTube videos and also just like Instagram posts like normal. And I think she does like live Q&As and stuff. So she like really, really check her out. She's amazing. That's one thing that you could do. I'm also subscribed. I just love trying all kinds of therapy and like healing stuff. So I'm also subscribed to her like paid thing. It's called the Healing Circle. And it's this like weekly new content every week and a book to read every month and stuff. It's really good. I'm not actually like really keeping on top of that, but the content stays, so you can go back and do like the months as you want to and download it and stuff. So yeah, maybe I'll try and post on the website under this episode. I'll actually update for this episode and just put like the books, like some of the books she recommends and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But yeah, anyways, it's good because like it's not just therapy. Like you don't have to just do therapy, like as in psychotherapy, CBT. You don't have mm-hmm. to go to a practitioner and like be like doing this.
You can do things offline. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like T was saying, art therapy, this kind of therapy, just like in general. Obviously, though,
psychedelic psychotherapy. Just
saying. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We talked about this briefly. Is that I wanna I read a paper by Imperial mm-hmm. about like psychedelic sort of. They did research on the brain. Yeah. I think for like
probably MDMA
mental illness. Yeah, I think so. And so, yeah, I read it and I was like, wow, this is so interesting and stuff. But I never actually, I didn't realize it was a real thing. I thought it was just like clinical trials and stuff like that. But no, apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, it's legit. There are clinics around the world, mainly in Europe, Yanni. But there are retreats, Yanni. You go, it's legal, very safe. And they help you. You take some psychedelics, you go on a trip and there's someone there helping you along the way. And for example, MDMA helps with PTSD, you know, so those with PTSD would help benefit from MDMA assisted psychotherapy. Yeah, that's cool stuff. One of the retreats off the top of my head is called Synthesis. So maybe that's like a place to start, I guess, for those who live abroad and can travel.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted actually when you said PTSD just now, I feel like everyone in like the Arab world, no, I don't want to generalize, but has PTSD.
Has some of it, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a spectrum. Egypt during the revolution. Yeah, but like I remember people getting shot downstairs, back in Amora.
Oh my god. Yeah,
and it's like when I hear like gunshots now. First of all, when I hear loud noises, I get so scared. I'm always like, it's a gunshot. Mm. Like someone's shooting their gun, you know. So that's not normal. Also, and on the other hand, if someone mentioned something like that, I'm a little bit desensitized. I'm upset, but I'm just a little bit like, it's okay, you know. So it's, I don't feel how I used to feel about it. So I don't know, just a passing thought, I guess, is that a lot of people in the region must have it just because of a lot of violence, like kids in the US, surely they have it, right?
Yeah,
from all the school shootings and stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, I can't diagnose, but I'm just saying, like, the world we live in right now, I think everyone could do with a bit of therapy, to be honest.
Yeah. But now I'm thinking you and I should do some psychedelic psychotherapy together. That would be so fun.
I know. We could do an episode on it after.
After we do it.
Yeah. Because I'm always, like, really scared. I think I've mentioned to you before, I'm really scared of stuff like that.
Mm.
But yeah, if there was a doctor involved, I would be like, okay, for it's sure. medicine.
Yeah, you'll be safe. You'll be safe.
Yeah, so that's I don't know, maybe season 2 of Voice Notes to Friends. Enlightened TNF, basically.
Basically, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else you wanted to say on the topic?
I don't know. I can't think of anything else. I think we unpacked enough that I'm like, I feel drained from this. Yeah. I don't know if there's more to add. I just feel like, you know, there's a lot of work to do. It's never ending, yeah. But that's the best kind of work, I guess, because it spills into literally every area of your life.
Yeah.
And just the idea is to just make anything unconscious more conscious, because most of our behaviors, we live life mostly unconscious, more than we think. And we can only do so much work while we're here. And so as much as we can make conscious, let's just keep doing that.
Yeah.
We're always going to keep uncovering shit about ourselves as long as we're honest with ourselves.
Also, I used to feel really selfish for spending this time, but like when you it's going to sound so cheesy. What? When you heal yourself, you heal everyone else. It's true.
It's true though. It's true. I'm laughing just because I know it sounds cliche, but it's true.
It's true. Like, when you do the work on yourself and then watch the world around you change, honestly.
Heal yourself. Each one heal of us your just life. Spend some heal time. Your life.
Yeah. It's so true, though. Like, honestly. And, like, we basically, the reason we re-recorded this episode, honestly, is because we felt we didn't get deep enough, I guess. We were, like, very surface level.
High level.
This is what happened. Like, yeah. So we wanted to get, like, more deep. But if you feel like there's something, like, if you have specific questions, feel free to ask. Honestly, I'm so much more open about my mental health now, because I'm, like, I don't know. Big realization is, like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
It just happened. So I'm just trying to, like, navigate it as best as I can. So feel free to ask, and I will try. It depends what you ask, but I'll try my best to answer. And like, if it helps, then that's exactly what we're after, basically.
Yeah. It's through these kinds of conversations that you break the stigma.
Yeah. Oh my God. I remembered one more thing. Sorry. What? I made a note. I started making notes during this podcast. When you were saying about imposter syndrome, I also really, really suffer from that. But one thing I wanted to say is that what I really like about this podcast is I don't actually have imposter syndrome with it, because I'm like, if you want to listen, like, I love it when you guys send feedback and stuff like that. But it's, I don't know, I feel like there's no expectation. Like, if you were like, oh, I didn't really like that, I'd be like, okay, cool. It's like a conversation. It's not, we're not preaching anything.
It's just opinions. It's just a discussion.
We're just talking, and you guys are kind of just listening. We're not claiming it's anything, so it's impossible to have imposter syndrome with it, because we're just talking.
Yeah, you know? Actually, it's so funny. The other day I was talking to one of my best friends, and she's seen me like grow and develop. It's one of those friendships, you know, those are the best kind come in. And I was telling you, like, I would never have imagined myself having being on a podcast, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's just crazy to think, like, basically no imposter syndrome when it comes to this, because it is just a conversation. If you don't like it's like, literally, if you don't like what you're listening to, I'm sorry, but this is, you know, how we think.
Yeah, and it's not in anyone's face as well. No. It's just there. Like, I was talking to a friend who creates content, like, a lot more professionally than this. And I was like, because he was always like saying, oh, you should do it, you'd really enjoy it. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I would place too much expectation, you know, and like, it needs to be perfect, it needs to be this. But actually with this, I don't know, try it, you guys, if you want. It's just like creating content, like just creating something and putting it out there. There's a weird feeling.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, here it is. Here's a part of me, kind of.
And it's so nice to see people relating, so...
Yeah, so definitely feel free. Please do, actually, just message us.
Yeah.
Or however you want, voice note us. Okay, thanks for listening, guys. Talk to you next Wednesday.
Bye.